Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes and Gord Miller. Doug Flutie will join us at 5:30. Amin El-Hassan from ESPN in 4 or 5 minutes on the Bruce Bowen, L.A. Clippers, Kawhi Leonard story.
Do you know who should be in the Fictitious Athletes Hall of Fame? Dean Youngblood. He was a good hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Although it's only been around since, what, 2013, you said?
Yeah.
And how many people get in each year? Three or four, yeah. 3 or 4?
Yeah.
So
Shane Falco.
Where does that ring a bell
from? The quarterback from The Replacements.
Okay.
Remember the kicker in The Replacements? Do you remember the movie The Replacement?
I don't really remember it.
So the NFL players are on strike, and so they bring these guys in. So Gene Hackman's the coach.
Is Burt Reynolds the in that, or is that the prison movie, the football?
That's The Longest Yard.
The Longest Yard, yes.
The original Longest Yard, The Mean Machine, that's a great movie. Eddie Albert's the warden. So they're coming back. So these guys are, you know, playing in the NFL because the players are on strike, right? And so Shane Falco was the quarterback, but the kicker was hilarious.
So explain to me why Forrest Gump should be in the Fictitious Sports Hall of Fame in front of guys like that who are legitimate athletes. It's a sports movie.
I know, but you don't have to be in a sports movie. You have to be a fictitious athlete. He was a fictitious athlete.
Yeah, but
he's a fictitious person who was a running back at Alabama, created the jogging craze, and was a killer ping pong player.
I can't debate any of that.
He was a triple threat.
Those are facts. If you've seen Forrest Gump, man, the guy's a machine on the ping pong table. Machine. And running back for Alabama, doesn't get any better than that down in the SEC. And I guess he ran around the world a couple times or whatever.
Well, he ran across America.
Ran across America a few times and then just stopped.
Like, does Ricky Vaughn deserve to be in this?
Absolutely.
Why?
Terrible. Ricky Vaughn's one of the great sports characters ever in a legitimate sports movie.
But he wasn't that good.
He was brilliant.
Well, at the end he was.
Once he got the shades, the guy was money.
once he got the jam jars on, he was fine.
But that's the whole arc of the movie. They all sucked. I think Jake Taylor should be in the Fictitious. He laid down the bunt.
He did.
He called a shot and lays down a bunt, runs it out.
And he had just been shot to death in Platoon, Tom Berenger.
One of the great movies of all time.
Right, so he had just been wasted in Platoon, and he comes back. And
Charlie Sheen was in that as well.
Yeah.
How about that?
And
Charlie
Sheen killed him.
Did Sheen kill Berenger? I guess he did.
Yeah, he shot him in Platoon.
Because I know that Berenger, am I saying that right?
Tom Berenger,
I think you're right, Berenger.
Yeah.
He kills Willem Dafoe, and that's the craziest scene. Or almost, basically kills him. Leaves him for dead.
No, then he does kill him, doesn't he? No,
because remember Dafoe comes running out, and they're all in the helicopters.
They leave him for dead in the helicopter, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got like his arms out, like, how could you leave me? Throwbacks. Like, Charlie Sheen had a great run, man. Platoon would have come out in 88, maybe?
Somewhere on there, yeah.
And Major League came out, I think, in 89?
Yeah.
What a back-to-back.
The other one, he was in Wall Street.
Versatile.
Wall Street?
Yes. But how about that versatility? You go from playing whatever his name was in Platoon, which really kind of made his career. That was the breakout moment for him. And then you're Ricky Vaughn. You don't see that much in Hollywood, man.
Who else?
Who else should be in the Fictitious Sports Hall of Fame? Well, there's a long list of them.
Well, Ned Braden. Ned Braden was the scoring star of the Charlestown Chiefs.
Yeah, see, I think once you get past the Hanson brothers and Reggie Dunlop, it's tough to reference an individual
name. Ogie Oglethorpe?
Yeah, but he was a bad guy. That's like Racky in Youngblood. Put Racky in. Remember Racky, that lunatic? That guy looks like, have you ever seen Racky? He looks identical to O'Neal.
You ever see the piece that we did on the actual Ogie Oglethorpe?
There was a real Ogie?
Oh, yeah, he's a real guy. Yeah, he'd eat like Coke bottles and stuff. He was crazy.
Warren tweeting in, Lou Brown, the manager in Major League,
Lou
Brown has got to be in.
You know what? What was the character? Wilford Brimley, the manager in The Natural.
Was he?
Yeah, he was good, too.
Tom Hanks in A League of Our Own. He was a great character.
Who was All the Way May? Madonna's character in League of
Their Own. Madonna. There was Gina Davis was in that movie. She played the lead role.
She was the best player.
She was the best player.
There's no women in it. They should probably look at that.
Yeah, they should. Come on, let's be all-inclusive here. I don't know. How did we stumble across this topic?
I don't know. Things just got to happen here. I quite often listen to Ray doing his hit for this show because we're driving to the rink. And I'll try to figure out like what you guys are talking about because I only hear half of it. And I'll try to figure out like how it got started. And I can't.
It never makes sense.
It doesn't make sense.
It never makes sense. I think it's Mike texting into 10:50:50 saying Henry Rowengartner from Rookie of the Year. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Where he breaks his arm, then all of a sudden he turns into a stud.
Yeah.
And then for some reason his arm goes back to normal, and yet he finds a way to get out of a jam in Major League.
Bugs Bunny and Space Jam?
In the Major League.
How about Bugs Bunny and Space Jam?
Well, they're coming out with a Space Jam 2.
I guess, huh?
Yeah, and LeBron's going to be a part of that. Yeah. Which, it has to be LeBron, right? Like, you can't have Space Jam with Jordan and then take a step back.
I love that you have firmly held opinions on what Space Jam 2 should look like. Did Space Jam 1 leave a lot of unanswered questions for you? Was there a lot of unresolved stuff in Space Jam that you felt you needed to...
Not necessarily, but I do... You know what's actually going to be intriguing about the casting of that movie is Bill Murray played a prominent role in the original. Right. So did Wayne Knight.
Yes.
A.K.A. Newman.
Yeah.
Who is going to play like that role? Who is the modern-day Bill Murray in Hollywood that can just kind of be a goofy, playing himself type of guy who comes out... And joins LeBron and
Will Ferrell.
That probably is it. Yeah, that's probably the guy.
And he actually, what was Will Ferrell's character? What was the
Ricky Bobby?
Ricky Bobby, the basketball movie. The
Old School. He was Jackie Moon.
No, it was semi-pro. Semi-pro.
Jackie Moon. Jackie Moon should be in the fictitious Hall of Fame. The Flint. I can't remember the name
they
of it.
Were
but
Florida.
They played in Flint, Michigan.
Oh, did they?
Flint Tropics, that was it. Yeah.
Jackie Moon could shoot the three ball.
That movie was awful, yet I appreciate it. Actually, you know what? There's some context in my own life. I believe my wife and I, our first real date, we went to see that. And somehow our relationship survived. Or maybe it was the first movie we went to see. Young and Eglinton, Silver City, Will Ferrell, semi-pro. What a movie. Harrelson's in that movie.
I'm going to take this a little weird, but I once took a girl on a first date on Valentine's Day to Schindler's List.
Just setting the mood.
The most bleak, depressing movie ever made.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I didn't know it was Valentine's Day, I think.
But even if it's early in the relationship, you can't, like, semi-pro was a bad call, but at least it's light and fluffy.
I know.
Schindler's List. What were you thinking?
I don't know.
That's a bad call, man. Here's Amin El-Hassan, ESPN NBA Insider. What's up, Amin?
What's going on, gentlemen?
Well, we've been talking about movies, and somehow we stumbled across Space Jam 2, and it sounds like it's in the running, and it's going to happen, and LeBron will play the role of Michael Jordan. And we were thinking, like, who is the modern-day actor that can play the role of Bill Murray, who played somewhat of a prominent role in the original? And Gord threw out Will Ferrell. I don't know if you're a Space Jam guy, but would you be okay with Will Ferrell and LeBron kind of running the show in Space Jam 2?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think the original was a terrible movie. It was just basically made for marketing, right? Like, these people think fondly about this thing. It's kind of ridiculous. It was made to market, to sell. They literally came up with the concept in the cast before they came up with a script. Having said all that, if you're going to pick, so yeah, Will Ferrell will be the guy, right? He's got that same kind of cachet. He's funny. He knows his hoops. That's the guy, I guess. Either him or the other guy thought of was Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah, he'd be a good one. Well, someone texting in, it's Kevin Hart, because Kevin Hart just does everything. Somehow Kevin Hart will work his way into this movie, because he's in every single movie.
You know what? He'll probably be in the movie if they can afford him. That's the whole thing. He does everything that they can afford.
Didn't he try to get on the podium when the Eagles won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, he did. He got like the Heisman.
Yeah.
Like,
he was trying to get up there, wasn't he? Yeah.
Get out of here, man. That was a bad look for him because you can't do that.
Oh, no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't because he said afterwards, guys, what can I say? I was drunk. He just admitted it. Like, I was drunk. I was drunk off my rear end, and I tried to do something that I probably shouldn't have done, and that's what happened. So, that's the magic of Kevin Hart, right? As long as you're self-deprecating, everyone just says, oh, shucks.
Valid. I mean, I think it was, he kind of got big-timed a little bit where he probably thought he could just cruise onto the podium. But you're right. If you're drinking and you joke about it and you're self-deprecating, you can get away with it. With Amin El-Hassan of ESPN, we want to get into this Bruce Bowen, Kawhi Leonard, L.A. Clippers story because obviously there's a connection up here in Toronto, and I'm quite curious to find out, and we won't know until it plays out, how the media in Toronto reacts to Kawhi and the courting of Kawhi and whether or not they feel obligated to play a role in it, because it appears as if, with Bruce Bowen being let go by the Clippers telecast, it sounds as if it's because he was somewhat critical of Kawhi, although I didn't think it really was critical at all. I thought it was just an honest opinion about how he thought Kawhi should have stuck around in San Antonio and maybe got bad advice. But what do you make of this story and the upcoming courtship of Kawhi Leonard?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's kind of murky, right? Because he wasn't let go. His contract is up, and they were trying to renew his contract, and then they decided not to renew his contract. So from the Clippers' standpoint, devil's advocate, they can say that the contract was not renewed for any number of reasons. He wanted too much money. They wanted to go in a different direction. They had someone else in mind. They can say a million things that have nothing to do with Kawhi Leonard as the reason why you did not renew the contract of an employee whose contract had expired, right? Now, the beyond that is the report that it was because of what he said was critical of Kawhi Leonard. Now, let's just assume that the report is correct. It's not someone trying to make sense of something that happened and putting two to do together, but there really is something going on there. If you're the Clippers, and if you indeed do this, really what it is saying, look, I'm not going to risk. There's no guarantee that Kawhi Leonard will be a Clipper. But he's made it pretty clear that L.A. is a destination where he'd love to be. And that leaves two teams, contrary to popular belief. Not just one. There are two teams in L.A. And so if you're the Clippers, you can't have a public-facing employee disparaging, not the player. That's not as bad as disparaging the people around him. And the people around him are his family. Remember, it's not just, hey, his agent, blah, blah, blah. It's specific people. It's his uncle. It's his mother. These are the people who are really hands-on in Kawhi's kind of management of his basketball business career. So when you hear an employee of yours disparage those people, that in many ways can be a lot more damaging than disparaging the player himself, because players are used to having people criticize them, right? He's not good enough. He's not good enough. But family members are not used to getting that kind of that flack. And so if indeed that's what happened, and I think people are really jumping the gun to assume that's what happened, then there is a reasoning behind that.
So, I mean, let me ask you this. Hypothetically, let's say the Clippers are playing the Raptors this year, and for whatever reason, Kawhi's having a bad run or, you know, isn't playing with an injury or whatever, and the new Clippers analyst feels like Kawhi's dogging it, I guess he's not going to say anything. Like now, if you're in the running for Kawhi Leonard, you can't say anything about him that you disagree with. Is that...
Well, here's the thing. So this is what I say. First of all, this concept that Kawhi dogs it is astonishing to me, right? That even it was a whisper this year that he was dogging it somehow. This is a man who, since he's come into this league, has shown nothing but elite work ethic, elite competitive nature, elite everything. When you talk about all the characteristics and qualities of a player that you want in your program, he's elite. He's the top 1% of the 1% when you talk about all those things. He has a year where he's legitimately hurt, and you know, you could say, oh, but the medical people cleared him. Well, they've cleared him before, and he got hurt anyway because he wasn't quite cleared. That's one thing, but to question his character, because now I've become, if Kawhi's sitting out because he's got a nagging groin or whatever, oh, he's dogging it. That shouldn't be something that we leap to talk about Kawhi Leonard about. Okay. He's not Lance Stephenson or some other kind of guy like, oh, this guy, he's always got issues. He's been a quality citizen pretty much his entire career. And now, because of basically what ended up being a smear job by the Spurs all year long, leaking stories, the most secretive organization in the NBA, all of a sudden we're getting updates every week about how Kawhi's not up to snuff. He's not doing what we want him to do, right? Because of that smear campaign. There's this weird thing now that's done. Now it's, let's all criticize Kawhi. And I've always, as a guy who worked in this league in the front office and had this conversation with many young players, we tell them all the time, your reputation is everything. Your reputation is everything. Because when things go, when the bleep hits the fan, people are going to look at you like, he's a good dude. He wouldn't do that. Or, yeah, he kind of gets into that kind of stuff. DeMarcus Cousins is a lovely human being, but he's dealt with a lot in his career because early on, he was a jerk. And so guess what? You don't get to shrug that off very easily, even as you pull over and over again after that you've grown and you've gotten more mature. But Kawhi Leonard, he deserved better than that.
Well, when it comes to Bruce Bowen, you know, I'm kind of with you in terms of my radar going off a little bit in terms of exactly what happened and why it happened, because I heard his comments and they did not seem to be overly outrageous or harsh. And he's Bruce Bowen. He's a Spurs legend. He's talking about the Spurs. He's going to have a connection to the Spurs. The Clippers are going to be aware of that. But when it comes to Kawhi, I mean, it's difficult to get a read on who he is and what he's all about. And you look at the situation up in Toronto, we've talked about it nonstop for a month. Trade was over a month ago. We haven't heard from him. We haven't seen him. He hasn't said anything. He issued a statement that didn't really feel as if it was written by him. Never mentioned Toronto. Never mentioned the Raptors. We've had guys on this station, on this show, have said, yeah, I've come across him. I don't even know him. Haven't said a word to him. Don't know anything about him. I mean, I don't recall a trade like this, a blockbuster trade like this, without having any idea of who the guy is, what he thinks, ever happening before. Like, have you ever seen anything like this?
Well, not in the modern era. And by modern era, I mean social media era. I think about it, this is, you know, because I'm a selfish, self-centered kind of guy, I think about everything in terms of me, right? So people, I've heard people tell me, you're not a good parent. I said, well, why do you say that? So, well, because I've looked at your Twitter and your Instagram, you don't have any pictures of your kids anywhere. Like, yeah, because those are my kids. It's my private life. It's my this is not for public consumption. This is something that I do, and the thing that I do with my children and my family is for me. And then if I go out on my own and I have fun and I go, you know, all right, I'll put that out there because I feel like that's what I'm comfortable being public with. Kawhi Leonard is being punished, in essence, because he's not putting his life out on Instagram, because he's not kind of the life of the party. That's not who he is. He's a very private guy. He has a very small circle of friends. I've talked to people in his circle, and guess what? He is talkative among people he knows, right? Michael C. Wright, who is a tremendous ESPN reporter, covers the Spurs, says if you want to get quiet to start talking in the locker room, just give him kind of like say something about rap. Like, say something like, oh, Drake's way better than Kendrick Lamar. And then all of a sudden you'll see Kawhi light up and start giving you reasons and become almost professorial. And the amount of, you know, words that he's going to say and break down this thing, whatever. But it comes down to a comfort level with who he's dealing with. And especially, again, if you're Kawhi Leonard and you see what happened to you last year, you say, I've been nothing but quiet dude who's never done anything wrong, and they crucified me.
Right.
How can you ever trust anybody again after that? I kind of see why he feels the way he does right now. If he feels like if he comes out and says some stuff in Toronto, are they going to respect that? Are they going to respect him if he makes a decision a year from now that leads him away from that? Oh, you're better off basically not saying anything.
If he does think Drake's better than Kendrick Lamar, that bodes well for the Raptors.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Oh. As I understand it, no. He's from L.A. He's an L.A. guy, so right. No way he's going to do that.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm also talking about it from a professional standpoint. Like, you get paid a lot of money. The teams, it's probably, they're not asking much out of you. Now, I get the impression like the Raptors are tiptoeing around him, because I don't recall being in a situation like this since they've come into existence where they've made a deal and they haven't made a player available. But obviously, they didn't force him to do anything. But,
right.
You know, and he's under contract, and that's kind of the way. It's not like he has to come out and say anything explosive or have hot takes or anything like that. But a meet and greet with a, hey, nice to be here, that probably wouldn't hurt him.
Well, a lot, but you got to understand, a meet and greet with him is going to be a lot of questions about, you know, people aren't going to ask, you know, again, the media's job is not to be friendly. The media's job is to get answers. And so if I'm local media in Toronto, obviously I'm going to have a lot of questions about what went wrong in San Antonio and things like that. Those are uncomfortable questions, and if he's uncomfortable answering them at this point, look, here's the reality, right? If you're the Raptors, man, this is the NBA, man. This guy's going to be a free agent in a year from now. You want to make life as comfortable for him as possible. You want everything to be kind of to his liking. Obviously, not to a detriment of the team and the team performance, but if it's something as simple as, I don't want to meet with the media. All right, then you got to meet with the media. Not until he signs an extension, and then in which case you're like, okay, now we got you for 5 years. Now we can start making some rules around here about things we want you to do, be more. Because now if he signs long-term, now you say you're the face of my franchise. You have to go talk. You don't have to talk at length. You don't have to talk interestingly, like you said. Don't have any hot takes, but you got to talk because someone has to answer the music, and typically that is the best player, that's the franchise player.
Always appreciate you doing this for us. We'll do it again down the road. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Amir.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
There's Amin El-Hassan of ESPN.
So, you know what? The defense of Kawhi is pretty passionate, and I can see it. I mean, I do think this. I think a lot of the time, guys that don't want to talk, that are quiet, that keep themselves, do get punished because they don't fill notebooks. And the best example of that was Joe Sakic, Quoteless Joe. Right, a writer in Colorado gave him that nickname, and it became this kind of thing that Joe's got nothing to say. Joe Sakic's one of the most interesting people you could ever talk to in hockey. Just don't ask him about himself. He doesn't want to talk about himself. And so he's got a lot of interesting views. He's a smart guy, but it gets held against you.
Yeah, it does, and there are certain expectations that you have. But I would think, even though he didn't give you a quote, technically, like, or he didn't give you what you were looking for.
He spoke.
That's what I'm talking about here, yeah, about Kawhi. Yeah. He doesn't have to do a media tour. He doesn't have to come up here for the whole month of August and go on every radio station, TV station, talk with every columnist in the city. But the rudimentary introductory press conference where he's up there and he says 10 words seems like standard procedure, and they didn't even get that out of him.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's because the Raptors were like, we're not even going to bother him, because we understand that there are some wrinkles we got to iron out here in terms of how he feels about the deal and feels about playing in Toronto, or if it's because Kawhi just said, no, I'm not doing it. Like, don't even ask me, or even if you do, I'm just going to pretend like you didn't, because I'm not going to go down that road. But you're right. In general, if people don't talk about themselves or aren't willing to talk or don't have anything to say, then eventually people are like, well, why aren't you giving me more? Even though they're not any under obligation to do it. Here's the difference, though, with Sakic. Sakic stayed in Colorado his whole career, outside of when they were in Quebec City, and he won. Kawhi Leonard, the reason people want to hear from him is because he just got here, and because there's a real good chance he's going to leave in a year.
Right.
So Sakic, I don't think they were ever under any illusions in Colorado that this guy's going to screw them over.
He did sign a free agent. He did sign an offer sheet with the Rangers.
That was matched.
It was matched, yeah. But he tried to leave.
Or he was trying to get Colorado to actually pay him what he thought he was worth.
Well, but if you don't want to play for another team, don't sign a contract with another team. Like, to, you know,
I hear what you're saying, but, you know, like, Philly signed Shea Weber and because he wanted that 15-year deal, big money, and Nashville wasn't willing to give it to him.
Keith Tkachuk got signed to a free agent offer sheet on this day a bunch of years ago, and the Jets matched it and then took the captaincy away. So, but anyway, back to the original point, it is funny how if you don't play ball, or put another way, if you do play ball, you get a lot further ahead. I think there's guys who have prolonged their careers by playing ball, being good with the media, being good in public.
Now, you do have to perform to an extent.
Oh, for sure. But if it's close.
Yeah. Ty will go to the gregarious, fun-loving, talkative guy. And it's the same thing, even more so. It's more amplified with coaches and managers. Like, and it's happening right here in Toronto with John Gibbons. Like, Gibbons is universally adored. And people that cover him, everyone I've talked to that's down there on a regular basis, they say he's great. Great to deal with.
And I'll add my voice to that. I called Blue Jay games for 5 years. I was the fill-in guy, so the second guy at TSN doing Blue Jay games. And I can tell you, he shouldn't have given me the time of day. And the two guys that were the best to me on that tour were Pat Tabler, who was an amazing partner, and John Gibbons. And he had nothing but time.
Mm-hmm.
He was generous.
And he treats everybody with that kind of respect, by all accounts, which is a real great characteristic to have.
Yeah.
It's one that you have to appreciate.
Yeah, but I get to your point, which is all the people in the media call him Gibby and like him don't want him fired.
Well, yeah, and I've just made this point. I am not anti John Gibbons. I think he's a pretty good manager. I think he's had a very good run here. I mean, in 15 and 16 he was the skipper of a team that went to back-to-back appearances in the ALCS. I like his demeanor. I find him fun and funny, and there's a lot of his quotes that I've used on the air and we've had fun with. But this is a team that won 76 games a year ago, and they're on pace to win less than that this year, and nobody is critical in any way about the manager. Now, I don't think he should be first in line. I don't think he should be second, third, fourth, or fifth. I think management should go first. I think the players should go second, and Gibbons is down the road. But it's not to say that he hasn't made some mistakes or that there aren't some games where you can point out, maybe he should have done this, that, or the other, where I think because he's good guy Gibby, you're like, who cares? I'm not going to go down that road. Where if he was a guy that people didn't like, hit pieces would be there.
Right. And I think the one thing is, if you're managing a team that was supposed to be good and isn't, that's one thing.
The expectations were low.
No one ripped Mike Babcock for finishing last as the coach of the Leafs.
No, they didn't, and they were honest about it. But there were times where I remember having conversations about, you know, should one of the kids be on the power play instead of P.A. Parenteau? Why isn't Morgan Riley on the power play? Remember that? He was only killing penalties.
Yeah.
At least it was a conversation. It wasn't an outrageous debate where people were just losing their minds, but it was brought into the realm of conversation. You know, people
do you think
we're still evaluating
him to
an extent.
Just say the Leafs have another good regular season and lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, he's in big trouble.
You think so?
I think so. And I think I would, without knowing the context, I think he would deserve that. That it would be three years in a row, you're out in the first round. You got all the talent in the world. And as we noticed this year against Boston, people started looking back on the run in Detroit, where after the back-to-back years in the Cup final, and basically when Lidstrom left, he lost a lot in the first round.
Yeah.
So
I'm just curious, because I think a lot of coaching is expectations.
I think, will have really high expectations.
But Mike Babcock was no different as a coach when they finished last as he was when, you know, they finished, they had a good year last year.
He's the same.
If you don't have the horses, like, I don't care how good a jockey you are, if you're riding a plow horse...
Valid, but if you're riding Secretariat and you can't get the best out of it, then you deserve that criticism, right? And that's the thing. The fundamentals of Babcock, I don't think are going to change. He is who he is. He's a great coach. He should believe in himself. You know,
he does.
He does, and he will. But, you know, if you can't get the most out of a group, at some point you're going to have to answer for that.
Right.
So I don't think, again, without knowing the context of how the whole season would play out, it's difficult to make these projections. But I think if the Leafs were to lose again in the first round this upcoming season, I don't think he'd be fired. But I think the heat would really be on him. Because it started this year. The honeymoon's over for Babcock. You know, the great Mike Babcock, who's here and highest paid coach in the league. You know, the Matthews ice time stuff. How poorly they played defensively at times. That started to wear on him in terms of the way people were reacting. Doug Flutie's going to join us. Get his take on Johnny Manziel not at practice today and a little bit of a strange explanation. Get his take on the comparisons. A lot of things to get into with him. So the great Doug Flutie will join us next. All right, Sean Reed Foley will join us just after 6 p.m., making his major league debut last night. That'll be fun to catch up with him. He looked pretty good. He's got good stuff. There's a reason they called him up. He's a part of their future.
I think that's, you know, I mean, that's a hard thing, right? That's when you get to the big leagues in anything, that's no matter how good you've been all the way along, when you get to that level, it's...
Right. And I'm sure it just blows by. Before you know it, you know, if you're lucky enough, you're in the league for 10 years and you kind of forget. Would you forget that big moment?
You can ask. I guarantee you can ask any athlete where they played their first game. Like, we're gonna have Doug Flutie on.
We got him on right now. Do you want to throw that out?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here is Doug Flutie. Go ahead, Gord.
Okay, Doug. Where was your first college game, your first NFL game, and your first CFL game? Doug.
And. Boom goes the dynamite.
What happened?
I don't know. The power just went out in here, so it's probably our fault, I would assume. But see if we can get him back.
Okay.
This is a great question.
I'm sure he knows the answer. We just got to get him back.
Boom goes the dynamite.
What happened to that guy?
Last time I heard, he was actually still working. Kind of grinding in the industry.
He's working, yeah. That's a kid in college at Ball State, I think.
And boom goes the dynamite.
There it is. So, some of the greatest. That might be my favorite YouTube clip of all time, and I feel for the guy.
There's no YouTube clip of me doing trying to say Slobodan Zivojinovic.
Was that when you like broke in, kind of?
Yeah, and I a guy got fired, and I came into the show, and this name, this train wreck of a name, I just couldn't.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine hearing myself on the air for the first time.
I didn't give up. Kept banging away.
You're still
banging away. No, at that name.
Oh, okay, you finally got it.
Seven times I tried it and just wouldn't give up.
All right, we got Doug Flutie, okay. I believe. Do you want to? Should we make sure he's on the line?
Doug, is the caller there?
I am on the line. Okay. How's it going, guys?
Good. So, Doug, I got a question for you. We're talking about athletes and their first games. I bet you can tell me where your first college football game was.
First college football game that I got into. Well, was at Penn State in front of 85,000 people and getting their tails kicked. It was 38-0, and I went in the fourth quarter, and I thought it was the only time I'd ever see the field.
First NFL game.
First NFL game was Chicago Bears versus Tampa Bay. I ran a naked bootleg into the corner of the end zone for my first touchdown, and my first touchdown pass in the NFL went to Walter Payton.
First CFL game.
First CFL game versus Calgary. I came in and played the second half. Ricky Foggy played the first half. I had a really, really good half. And it ended up being a 300-yard day and threw a pass on the last play of the game. Sort of Hail Mary from about 35 yards out to Ray Alexander to tie the game and send it to overtime.
See, I'm telling you,
incredible.
I don't know an athlete. I can honestly say, Doug, every athlete I know, if you ask them about their first game, they know it. They'll never forget it, right?
Yeah. First game of Pop Warner, I went into the game with safety. They thought I was too small.
No, you are a freak.
They were afraid to put me on the field. Put me in at the very end of the game when the game was over. A guy broke a run into the secondary, went to run me over. I just pulled the ball out of his hands and started going the other way.
So, are you one of these freaks, though, that can remember, like, every detail of every play, though? Like, you know, golfers sometimes, you know, they can recite every shot. Can you do that throughout your career?
Specific games, no doubt. You know, there's games that, I think a lot of times it takes someone to trigger the memory. They'll throw a situation at you of a game or something, and you go, oh, yeah, it was 3rd and 18, and we did that, or, you know, whatever. There's a ton of those for sure. But a lot of times you need a little trigger. You need somebody to give you a reason to remember it.
Did you watch Johnny Manziel's first game?
I watched parts of it and highlights and or lowlights, whatever you want to call. It's a different game. There's learning, and Matt Dunnigan said it really well. He's got to get to the point where he knows what he's seeing. Then you can anticipate things and you get ahead of the game.
With Doug Flutie, you've talked about the comparisons between yourself and Manziel. When you joined Gordon and I last year, I believe it was, you actually brought up that comparison. That's when it was just rumors that maybe Manziel would come up here. But you didn't go through like a 2-year gap where you had some real personal issues like Manziel had, where he wasn't involved in pro football at all. I mean, out of the limited highlights that you've seen or lowlights, like you said, do you still see yourself at all in Manziel?
You still see all kinds of athleticism there. You know, the ability to escape the quick. His first interception. Really quick athletic move, got up in the pot, moved around, took off, then kind of shoveled it over guy's head to his back right in front of him. You know, really just a creative, instinctive play that should have been a positive game, and the guy doesn't handle the ball, bounces off his hands, is intercepted, and then it snowballed from there. So he still shows the ability to do those things. The flair, and it's always been the instinctiveness, but, you know, you've been away from it for a while. You know, the speed of the game, you got to catch up to it. And like I said, what Matt said with Dunnigan, when the game slows down, when you start seeing the coverages in the front and all that stuff over and over again, and so instead of reacting to it, you know what's happening before it's happened or as it's happening, so you know where you're going with the ball. And so you make decisions with confidence because he's still got good enough arm to get everything done. He's got good athleticism, can still do that. It's knowing what you're seeing and turning it loose. And then I just feel like he's athletic enough that even before you get to that point that you really learn the game like the back of your hand, that he's athletic enough to still make plays and put him in a position to be successful. I think that's got to fall on the coaching staff a little bit to help him out. And maybe they're just not a talented team either. I don't know that. Right. I don't know the league inside now.
So, Doug, how long did it take you to get real comfortable? Because you came up halfway through the year, right? That first game for BC. Was it halfway through?
I was there. No, I played a little bit of a preseason game, and I was on the roster right away. But Larry Koharik was the head coach at the time, and they had Ricky Foggy. He had been playing in the league for a while.
Yeah.
So Ricky
and I split time through the first whatever numbers of weeks.
Okay.
And I had some ups and downs in that year too. I mean, I had some, like the very first game I played, I came in the second half and I ended up having a 300-yard passing day in the second half. But I also had some days where nothing was going right. I mean, I don't remember, you know, specifically bad numbers of what, you know, whether it was interceptions or just 20, you know, not over 50% or whatever. But I'm sure there were those because they were mixed in too, because there were games that I started and Ricky came in for me. But Bob Obilovich came in the midpoint of the season and he made me the guy and things just took off.
Right.
You know, it was like all of a sudden he was putting me in a position. He was running traditional CFL offenses that he put me in a good position to be successful. We'll just put it that way.
So were you comfortable like 2 months in?
Probably, I started to become consistent within 6 to 8 weeks. I started being consistent. I had my moments right away, but I wasn't consistent until probably about the 8 week mark.
With Doug Flutie, and what Manziel's always been pretty open and honest about, and I'm sure you were as well. I mean, the media coverage wouldn't have been the same way when you broke into the CFL, but he wants to use the CFL as a stepping stone to get back to the NFL, and he's not alone. I mean, that's always been the case. But mm-hmm. I'm not sure he was aware, or if he is aware, I'm sure he is by now, but that it took you a long time. I mean, you're up here for 8 or 9 years, and did you have that same ambition year over year? Like, did you always have that vision of getting back to the NFL, or did it kind of die down after a while?
When I first came up, my impression was, I made the decision to come. There were some teams talking to me in the NFL, but I wanted to play and be the guy on the field. And I was getting 28 to 30 years old by that time, and I was like thinking, you know, you only have so many years. And so that was my first intent, was I wanted to be the guy on the field, you know. But then when I started to play, I thought 2 years and I'll go back to the NFL. My situation was I had a 6,600 yard passing year in my second year. And all of a sudden I was worth more money in the CFL than I was in the NFL. And I was enjoying it and it was fun. And I wasn't looking to go back for a little while. And when I left Toronto after 8 years in the CFL, I was really contemplating retirement. I was 35 years old. And I was talking to my agent about, you know, calling it quits and, you know, moving on to a broadcasting career or something. And then Buffalo came knocking. And I really wasn't looking to go back to the NFL. But Buffalo called, and it took all of 2 seconds for me to go, I want to do this. I want to go prove people wrong. And it kind of rekindled that spark. I really wasn't looking for it to happen, and it just all of a sudden happened.
Do you think Johnny Manziel has that drive to prove people wrong?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think when something is taken away from you, then you get the drive. You know, I've texted Johnny a couple of times. We just, you know, back and forth once in a while, just letting him know, you know, I'm wishing him the best and supporting him. And, you know, so I think things came easy for Johnny early. You know, he won a Heisman Trophy as a freshman.
I know.
You know, you walk out on the field and things go right. So he's never really had to deal with adversity. And that's why, you know, it was difficult for him when things didn't just, you know, keep happening for him. But for me, I was always had that chip on my shoulder, like always trying to prove people wrong. So there was always motivation for me. And now I think he has the motivation. I assume he does, or it feels like he does.
Well, it's got to feel great for him to actually get out there and play. Right? Oh. Like it's been a long, like, could you imagine you were an athlete, your brothers were athletes, you lived it, you were in locker rooms your whole life and as a pro and in college, but could you imagine in your mid 20s leaving a locker room for 2 years, what that would be like?
No, and in your prime, you've always been an athlete. You've always had that field. You've always competed. And I'm sure, he was very, that first day he put the pads back on and got back out on the field, I mean, I'm sure he was very excited. So, yeah, it's, I can't imagine the feeling of having it taken away. I made the decision. I was very few guys get to make the decision on their own that, you know, I've had enough. And I played till I was 43. And I probably shouldn't have played the last year I played. But I was ready to retire. I was ready to say, you know, I've had enough. And to have it taken away from you, it's got a sting. And you just, you know, you I'm sure he's got to be a gym rat. That I mean, I know I'd be in on a basketball court every day if I were, you know, at 28 years old with the athleticism that he has, that he was still playing sports and trying to do other things and then getting himself in a position to get back on the field.
With Doug Flutie, we were reminiscing of your first games in college and CFL, NFL. Blair with a tweet, a very important one, said he got asked, Doug Flutie, does he remember the first time he tried Flutie Flakes? Do you remember the first time? Very important.
Oh, my gosh. We were in Buffalo at the house. And my agent showed up with a box and said, this is what we're doing. I go, I kind of looked surprised because this was an endorsement deal that had been done before I even got to Buffalo. It got done during the off season. And then it just happened to time out that the boxes came out at the time I became the star. It was like the perfect storm as far as the marketing end of all that. But I had been told that I was going to do this marketing thing, and we were going to do a frozen pizza. That's what we were talking about. Okay.
What, the Flutie? Like Flutie Flakes is what was it? The Flutie Flan? Like what is?
Yeah, what would that
have
been
called? I don't know. But then the last month or so that it turned into, you know what? They think the profit margin is better with the cereal. We're going to go this direction. I'm like, all right. So I didn't even real. And then it showed up, and yes, I do remember tasting it. It was like a crunchier, thicker frosted flake.
Do you still have any boxes or what?
I've got a handful of unopened boxes at the house, and then like maybe a big box of just the flats that you can, you know, fold the box into a box and sign it and use it for charity stuff.
Nice.
So, you know, we send out the flats still, but we sold over 6 million boxes.
Wow, that's awesome! That's huge.
It raised about $2.5 million for the foundation.
And that's Jimmy amazing. And Jimmy Johnson didn't buy one box of them. Not one.
Yeah, they beat us in the playoffs, and Jimmy was stomping a box of Flutie Flakes in the locker room.
Yeah, but you got him though. You got him in college. He'll never forget that. He'll never forget that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. That was that coaching staff was ready to commit suicide by the end of that game because they had lost. They had lost a game against Maryland, and Frank Reich had a 31-3 at halftime. Come back and beat Miami.
Yeah,
and then they lose to us like that, and then they lost. I think it was UCLA on a 55-yard field goal.
The last
three games of that season for that coaching staff. That was crazy.
Well, it's always great catching up with you. We appreciate you doing this. We'll have to get you on again down the road. And if you're ever in town, you got to bring up a box of Flutie Flakes. We need to see it. We have to see.
Will
it.
Will do.
All right.
Will do.
Thank you, Doug.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks,
all
Doug.
Right, guys.
There's,
take care, Gordon.
3-time Grey Cup champ, Pro Bowler, the face of Flutie Flakes, Doug Flutie, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
You know, Jimmy Johnson forbid his name to be said. You could not say Doug Flutie's name in Jimmy Johnson's. So for those who don't know,
the
miracle of Miami, Boston College over the Miami Hurricanes. Knocked them on a national championship contention. I think they were the defending national champions.
That was Michael Irvin was on that
team. Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, I think. Was Emmitt Smith there?
I don't know if Smith was there. But
so they were dynamite.
Yeah, they were.
The Rock might have been on that team for all we know. And
in later years, he went to Miami. Warren Sapp went to Miami.
Yeah, but Jimmy Johnson hated him so much, you could not say his name in his presence. You could not say Doug Flutie's name.
Wow. Well, shout out to Doug Flutie.
He's great. Played like he's 43, man.
That's amazing, man. I did not remember that. Yeah. Like, I remember he got to the NFL late, but played 8 years in the NFL after 8 years in the CFL.
Every week he was in the CFL, the Boston Globe ran a double box with Flutie's numbers, and next to him, the numbers for whatever quarterback played for the Pats that week.
Right.
For years.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea. Sean Reed Foley of the Jays will join us just after 6 p.m. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.
The greatest moments in history are now up to you. This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Yeah! All right, so we know who won the 2018 version of Sound Wars. That would be our good friend Mac Jameson, the Vegas legend.
The Vegas legend, yeah.
Who joined us in the 4 p.m. hour. And I guess because last year was the inaugural season, this is the first time we're going to have two champions going up against each other.
Oh, so like the Tournament of Champions on Jeopardy.
That's right. The 2017 champ up against the 2018 champ. So okay. The 2018 champ, we're aware of which one that is. To refresh your memory of who won in 2017, this was the clip.
The first pick goes to the Maple Leafs.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
The Leafs.
The Leafs.
They did it, Naylor.
I hate that clip. I've always hated that clip. And that was me who actually shouted that out. Well, I just sound so stupid. Like, it's just, you know, and that's not new.
No,
that happens a lot.
No, you don't. Like, that's fine.
It's genuine excitement. I was excited that Leafs won the lottery.
Was O-Dog sitting with you then?
O was on the TV side.
Oh, because he's fist pumped.
He went crazy.
O went nuts.
Right. And I was excited for the city of Toronto and Maple Leaf fans. They won the lottery. Excited. They did it, Naylor. So that clip is going up against this year's champ.
Mac Jameson? I want to hear the beginning again, because I guarantee if I hear the guy's voice, I'll tell you who it is.
All right.
Is this Brian?
This is
That's
Brian.
Brian, it's Brian. I quit the show.
All right, so go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your ultimate champion. The ultimate champ. They did it, Naylor, up against Mac Jameson. Voting for this Sound War closes Thursday at 8 a.m. Listen to Landsberg in the morning for the Sound War's ultimate champion for the summer of 2018. And I guess 17 as well. Only right here on TSN Radio. Sean Reed Foley making his debut last night. Yeah. He will join us to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. Some news out of Edmonton that is not good. We'll get back into the Ryan Ellis contract and what that means for Jake Gardner going forward. Yeah. And some reporting from Gord Miller that we've got to touch on.
Okay.
People are going to want to hear this. 6 p.m. hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.